Hey guys, welcome to another State of the Nation. This is an edition where we talk about bringing NFTs to DeFi. This is a special edition as well because it's on site, on premise, at a conference. You're going to get the full conference experience in this episode. What are we talking about today, David?
Yeah, this is a live episode that we recorded at the Metaverso conference about bringing NFTs to DeFi, bringing DeFi to NFTs. What happens when these worlds collide? And I started off this panel with just a very quick introduction. There's only two types of tokens out in the world. There's non-fungible tokens and there's fungible tokens. That's the whole entire category.
That's and true so, in real life too, by the way.
Yeah, it's also true items. In real life. Yep. Yeah.
Either fungible or non-fungible. Mm-hmm.
That's the only categories. But then there's the intersection of these things where the lines can start to blur. And cool new things can be built out of that. And so this is a 35-minute panel that we recorded with four guests from around the cryptosphere. And those guests are Andy 8052. You guys might remember him from a couple NFT shows that we've had. He is the founder of Fractional. There's Ben Lakoff from Charged Particles, Laura Jaramillo from Upshot, and Sam Cassatt from Neptune DAO. So those are the panelists. And we just talked all about the cool stuff that happens when you intersect ERC-20 and ERC-721.
Guys, this is going to be a double level up for you today because it's not only a level up on NFTs, it's also a level up on DeFi and this new thing, including where they both intersect. So it's a good opportunity to learn a bit more about liquidity into NFTs, number one. The second is, how do you generate NFT communities using DeFi? Can you fractionalize NFTs? What does that look like? How does that guide in your investment decisions? And also, I think you guys are going to get into the one thing that all NFTs depend on, and that is oracles. So a lot to unpack here. Hey guys, before we go too much further, want to let you know about MetaMask. MetaMask is sponsoring this message. They want us to let you know that they are working hard on hardware support. Okay, MetaMask plus Ledger, that's a combo I often use whenever I'm using Web3. MetaMask, of course, is a fantastic Web3 and crypto wallet, and they are improving integration with the Ledger. Also, MetaMask on the Lattice wallet is really been amped up and actually newly released. Also, the Keystone wallet, if you're using a Trezor, if you're using a Lattice, if you're using a Ledger, this is the way to get into crypto while using protection. You need that protection, the hardware protection that comes with owning custody of your own key, not having private keys inside of a browser. So MetaMask plus hardware wallets, a fantastic team up. And I would just encourage you, you probably have MetaMask. If you don't, go download MetaMask. If you already have MetaMask, then connect your hardware wallet to it and try the experience out again. There's been some bumps along the way with Ledger and MetaMask support that some of you guys have experienced. They are working to improve that. And I think the latest firmware updates on the Ledger have improved that to a great degree. So check that out. We'll include a link in the show notes. David, we're going to talk about the panel itself and the content of the panel. But before we do, I want just a taste of the conference. Give me the conference experience, okay? Because here I am in my office all the time. I never come out of my office, right? I don't go places.
I'm not sure it's possible.
Well, we don't know that for sure. But like, you know, one day you and I will meet at a conference in real life. One day soon, I promise. But until that time, for people who don't have the opportunity, the time to go to a conference, what was the Metaverso conference like?
Yeah, the Metaverso conference was a one-day conference, which I think is the first one-day conference I've been to in a really, really long time. And I think everyone really, really appreciated that because this is also coming out on the heels of Art Basel, which was a very long week in Miami, which was everyone was talking about how draining it was. But Art Basel is something that it happens every single year. I'm just learning about this because I didn't know about it. Big, big art like decentralized convention of sorts. There's many different venues and events just doing art stuff in Miami. And this year, it was the running joke that it's actually called Crypto Basel now because all the NFTs have taken over Art Basel. So everyone was in Miami. Yep.
So there's two conferences, right? There's
two
one. You went to two conferences in the space of like the last 7 days or so. One was Art Basel in Miami, and the other is Metaverso in Puerto Rico. Yeah. The panel we have upcoming is from Metaverso. But Art Basel, you're saying this was an art conference before NFTs?
Right. Totally.
Okay. And the NFT people are now like invading it? What's the feeling there?
Yeah, so like I said, there is the one canonical like Art Basel at the Miami Convention Center on Miami Beach, and even that had NFT stuff in it as well, but not too much. All the other like events, just like different just installations. There was a big installation on a beach that people would go see, and there's this one big piece of art there, and people would hop around all these different venues and events, going to all just checking out all the art. And all of them were like NFT, had some sort of NFTs about them somehow, somewhere. And the industry is in the art industry, not the NFT industry, is in some sort of like kind of in a state of very much immaturity, trying to figure out how to actually display NFTs. There's a lot of just kind of like amateurish NFT displays where, like, you know, you had vertical NFTs being displayed on horizontal screens. So there are big black bars. There are TVs just on TV stands on tables rather than like as a frame on a wall.
First year, though, it's going to get better.
First year. Yeah. You can't really knock them too hard because this is brand new. It's just happened. But there's much to be desired with, like, in real life NFT displays, right? Like, how do we actually show these things?
Yeah.
Somebody that I saw do it really, really well had NFTs projected up on a big, big wall. So this artist, this is Nate Moeller, who's the artist that I bought my NFTs for from forever ago. He was actually displaying those NFTs, two big projectors that were synced up. So like there, it just looked like one big thing, and he had it blown up. It looked like, I think it was like 50 feet wide by 25 feet tall on like this massive wall. And so those, that was really, really well done. But the art industry is like trying to figure out how to come to terms with appropriately displaying this very new format of like digital art with NFTs.
Are they cool with it? So, you know, in our podcast with Kevin Rose, he actually used the term, you know, trad art, right? And I'm going to continue using that. So like, what does the trad art world think of this new NFT thing? Is there some resistance, or is there a warm embrace like, hey, welcome to the family? This has injected some new energy into the art scene. What's the feeling from Art Basel?
I think the art collectors, I don't think, are too different from the typical distribution of crypto skeptics to non-skeptics. They're not really any different. Like, some people like crypto, some people don't. I don't think the art collectors are any meaningfully different than the average person that you would get. Some people are, again, some people are think it's the future. Some people are totally skeptical. The artists love NFTs. because specifically
it's empowering,
very, very much so. And it's a new cohort of artists that are now able to play in Art Basel because of NFTs. Yeah. So it's not really the trad artist. It's a new set of artists that have come into the fold specifically because of NFTs. And then there are specifically events being spun up that are just trying to be conducive to that type of art, kind of the very, very experimental, very much on the fringe digital art that wouldn't have really had an opportunity elsewhere.
Do you know what's so wild? I feel like this is a microcosm of what's happening in every single industry, right? So you get like trad art, and then you have like this NFT thing, the crypto thing is kind of invading trad art a little bit. And I mean that in a good way, injecting new energy, creating this new medium. But it's not just art. It's like every industry, okay? This is happening in finance. This is happening in like entertainment, Hollywood, the movie industry. It's now like NFTs. This is happening in gaming. So I don't know how many conferences and conventions you intend to go to, David, but like you could go to them every week, all year around in all of the different industries and have crypto, NFTs, DeFi represented in some way or another. It's just really invading every single aspect of like industry that's going on. Like we haven't even talked about music, right? I mean, I'm sure there's like music conferences and festivals, NFTs are going to have a huge prominent display.
It was also interesting to see some of the platforms having like just cubicles or just like sections in these art venues. Super Rare had like just I think they had something like 10 TVs up on a wall. And when I say TVs, these are actually good like frames that are meant for displaying art. And so Super Rare had this their own little section of this art display, the mixed with trad art. And then Super Rare was also debuting. Of course, they don't make art; they host art. So they were, again, hosting art, but this time in real life rather than on their website. So they had actual artists that were also with them in the booths having their art displayed. And so it was kind of cool. It was like the real website of Super Rare just being manifested in this section of the art show in real life. I thought that was kind of cool. Hash masks were also there at the same place. And there's a number of there was one venue that just looked like in real life OpenSea. It was kind of funny. It was like, oh yeah, if OpenSea came and actually just like had an in real life installation that this is what it would look like.
All right, so tell me a little bit. That was the Art Basel conference experience. Tell us a little bit about Metaverso for people who couldn't attend. So how did that contrast? How it was different? I know this is hosted by somebody who's on Bankless previously, G Money, who's on a Layer Zero podcast. So what was different about this one?
Yeah, this was a lot of people here were at Art Basel, and they had just hopped over from Miami to Puerto Rico. But this cohort of people were a lot closer to the core of what I would call crypto. These are all the people that like get it and know that everyone else around them also
the crypto natives, the NFT natives. This was sort of there was no trad art scene at the Metaverso conference then.
Yes, correct. Yeah, so there were. It was all digital displays showing NFTs that all the NFT collectors love. Serotonin and Mojito, which are a marketing and NFT advisory company, they were also helping set this up, and that's Amanda Cassatt and a few other also like crypto natives that have been with Consensus for forever and now are doing their own thing. So yeah, it's just a bunch of crypto natives, and then all the sponsors that you would expect as well. And again, it was just a one day thing, and they did a very smart job of starting the conference at 11 rather than something crazy like 8.
Yeah.
So people could just like warm up their day and then get to the conference.
Oh, that's way better.
Yeah. It was just one stage with about 200 chairs, about 400 people there. Some people were inside, outside, and just a great, fantastic list of just topics and conversations. And it was just what I really appreciated about it was how concentrated it was. It was like everyone could focus their energies just on one day. And because all of the good stuff was happening on that one day, everyone felt FOMO about like not watching a panel. So the panels were decently well attended.
So everyone was together. Cool. People weren't skipping panels, and it was only like 400 people or so. So it was fairly small and intimate.
Totally. Yeah.
That's
and
awesome.
Just did a really good job. G Money, he's pseudo anonymous. So if you like follow him on Twitter, he always has his ape as his VR filter. But in real life, like, no, there's no VR filter in real life, but he still goes by G Money. So if you ever meet G Money in real life, like he'll shake your hand and it's like, oh yeah, I'm G Money. But he still doesn't tell you his name.
That's hilarious. That's great. Yeah. So were there any takeaways from you from Metaverso conference?
My takeaways is that Puerto Rico is really, really cool. Yeah. Everyone really likes to be in Puerto Rico. It's a great spot to host a conference, even if it's just a one day. It was very much, it made a ton of sense to host it right in this present moment because it was right after Art Basel. Half the industry was already like only 2.5 hours away.
Yeah.
And it was everyone who cares deeply about NFTs for all the right reasons. There was a charity auction as well, so NFTs were being auctioned off to go to charity support Puerto Rico infrastructure, which is still needed in the wake of the hurricanes that happened last year. And it was overall just a fantastic event.
So tell me this, David. What do you get out of conferences that you don't get out of like in-person conferences that you don't get from like all of the Zoom meetings and all of the YouTube and podcasts that people consume, that in the Twitter back and forth banter and the Discord servers? What's different? Make the pitch for going to a conference. Why is it important?
Yes. Well, first off, some people that are really, really cool and interesting just aren't there. They're not on Twitter. They're not on the Zoom meetings, right? And so it's really just a matter of having surface area to a lot of people all at once. You can go and meet 5 people inside of 30 minutes and the probability of one or two of those people having like long-term relationships is pretty damn good. And so like there is no replacing real life. As much as we all want to live in the metaverse, just seeing faces and for those that are on crypto Twitter, like me and Ryan, like degenerately all the time, meeting someone in real life actually does impact like how I read tweets when it's coming from somebody that I know. Wow. And this is true for emails and for podcasts, right? Just once you meet the person, you just get a little bit deeper, like more introspection as to like what they are actually thinking about when they write stuff and show stuff.
So it's important for like community cohesion, and like you're actually able to form a different type of connection in person versus all of the digital mediums that we use.
Totally. And ideas can be shared just a lot faster. Just communication just a lot more lubricated. I don't know if you watched the State of the Nation I did with Robbie in real life at NFT NYC, But having Robbie right next to me, the conversation was really fast and it moved really, really quickly because I could look at him, he could look at me, there was body language. And like we forget about these things definitely on Twitter and even on Zoom. Like you just kind of don't really get that. You and I, we don't have that problem because we've been on Zoom like
Well, I don't know.
Hours.
How good could it be if like we were doing this in person?
What a question.
I mean, yeah, maybe we'd be number one of the podcast charts rather than number four in the Apple investing category. I don't know.
Yeah, it's just like everything just happens faster. And so for people like me that really also have just like fantastic, enriching social experiences for the, experiences from these events, just this more socialization per second. And so yeah, there's just more alpha. There's more people can just say things that they're interested in at a higher tick rate.
More, like, more opportunities, more alpha, better connections. Guys, that is your pitch. And I feel like that pitch is coming from David to me of why I should attend a conference in 2022. But we're coming at
this
the end
of the
year,
2021. This is why Ryan descends me. He's like, you got to it. Like,
I get all of the benefit because David just does all of this. But, you know, yeah, absolutely, guys. So if you're looking at conference 2022 schedule, there's a lot of great crypto conferences coming up. So budget some time, plan some time to meet the people that you see in the digital world in real life. It's definitely worth it. And David, next year is the year you and I will meet in real life. So at one of these conferences at some point or another. But okay, let's talk about your panel now, because we got to the point where we're going to intro this. This is really cool. So the combo of DeFi plus NFTs equals magic. I guess that's what you're talking about on the panel. So why should folks stay tuned to this panel? What are you guys talking about?
Yeah, there's a number of quick conversations that we had, and really the format of this is just I proposed a question, posed a topic, and just let the panelists take it down the line. Each one had their opportunity to share. Sometimes they built off of each other, but sometimes they just gave their thoughts. There are really important conversations with, for example, Fidenzas, very highly valued art block NFTs with relatively low volume. Like weeks can go by without a Fidenza sale. And so as collateral in DeFi or integrating ERC-721s into applications if you want to use the capital that's locked inside of a Fidenza, you need to have a secure and accurate price feed that the market can rely on. And so like, how do you get a price feed for something that has one sale per week? And it's a floor. How does that even actually relate to a rare Fidenza rather than a floor Fidenza? So like solving that problem is hard, but definitely possible. If you want to skip to the end and just like come to the conclusion, the answer is there is no good way to do this. You have to do all of them and then combine them, which is a problem in of itself. The other really important thing I think is really, really cool about NFTs that we're definitely watching it happen right now, but I think it really could supercharge people that really want to lean into this, is that a fractionalized NFT can make a community. And we're already seeing this with PleaserDAO. PleaserDAO, they bought the OG Doge meme for $2.4 million. And it's the meme of the internet. Jameis from PleaserDAO likes to say it's the Mona Lisa of the internet. How, like, it's the Doge. Like, it is the internet's meme. And so, like, there's only one of those. And PleaserDAO owns it. But it's the internet's meme. And so they have used fractionalize it into the dog currency. So the dog token is backed by the Doge NFT. And now everyone can have a share of the Doge. And now there's a fantastic Discord and DAO spun up around the dog token because it's a part of the Doge NFT.
Well, what's super interesting about that is just like economically, we talk about value creation. So they bought the Doge NFT for $2.5 million, as we said, somewhere in that ballpark, right? Okay, then they tokenized it, fractionalized it, and the dog token is worth, I'm just looking on CoinGecko, $50 million, right?
Right, right.
So it's like that's a 20x in terms of increased value creation, right? And people might debate, is that, you know, is this a meme token? Is this value? What is this real value?
Definitely a meme token.
But I mean, you can measure the value that was created from the DeFi markets. So I haven't watched this panel, David. I'm really excited to dig into it because what's cool about NFTs is, of course, when paired with DeFi, they inherit all of DeFi's superpowers. All right, traditional art doesn't get any of this, which is why I'm like kind of bearish traditional art relative to NFTs in the same way I'm bearish gold relative to like crypto assets like ETH and Bitcoin, right? Because there's so much more you can do with it. And it's just going to give all of these NFTs superpowers. David, before we get into this, is there anything else you want to mention?
Yeah, so in kind of in the same vein as fractionalizing the Doge NFT, PleaserDAO is also launching FreeRossDAO, freerossdao.com. So definitely check that out. It's the Constitution DAO, but instead of buying the Constitution, they're buying Ross Ulbricht's NFTs that he's issuing from jail. The money that is going to FreeRossDAO to purchase his NFTs, the money that the purchase will go to is to a combination of actually trying to free Ross and then also donating to funds that help loved ones visit their other loved ones in jail. And so freerossdao.com, it's again kind of the same thing as a fractionalized Doge, but instead of PleaserDAO buying this NFT and then fractionalizing it, they are spinning up the DAO and just donating their capital into the DAO. And so this is, again, Constitution DAO for freerossdao.com. If you're interested in helping Ross get free, maybe you are interested in taking part in the fractionalization of the Ross Ulbricht NFT if FreeRossDAO buys it from Ross. So
the experiments are getting weirder, but the experiments are also getting better. So stay tuned to this panel, guys. You will find out what is next with the combination of NFTs and DeFi from the following experts. We want to get right to the content, so we're just doing a quick sponsor rundown for you. These are the sponsors that made this episode possible. Go check them out. Fantastic sponsors on Bankless all of the time. Uniswap, apply for a grant. Uniswap DAO. Aave, get a loan without a bank. The Bankless way.
We also have Lido, where you can stake your ETH and get ST ETH in return, which accrues more ETH because that's how staking works. And of course, we have Gemini, which is the exchange that I recently bought the dip on, and that buy feels great. So buy your dips on Gemini.
Thanks to the sponsors that made this episode possible. You guys rock.
All right. Thanks, everyone, for being here. This is actually going to be the first ever live podcast of Bankless, so that's pretty exciting. And of course, just to recap, this is about the intersection of NFTs and DeFi. And to really get that started, I just kind of want to put this frame into people's minds as they think about this. Really, there's only two types of tokens on Ethereum. There's ERC-20s, and then there's ERC-721s. That's kind of, it's more than that, but that's really just the gist of it. And that's what you get there. You got ERC-20s, the fungible tokens, which are DeFi, and then you have the non-fungible tokens, which are NFTs. And so when you put those things together, that's the whole thing. And so what happens when we talk about the intersection of those two types of token standards? And that is what we will be unpacking today on this panel. And so I want to introduce all of our panelists. If you guys want to just give your introduction and a quick elevator pitch as to what you do and your company, we will start with Andy here.
Hey, thanks for having me. I'm Andy. I co-founded Fractional, which does NFT fractionalization. It's very on the nose of the name. But yeah, I've been working in crypto and DeFi for a long time. I'm super excited to be here.
Awesome. Hi. My name is Laura Jaramillo. I'm the lead product designer at Upshot. We do real-time, on-chain NFT appraisals using peer prediction and machine learning, and accurate price prediction once and for all.
Hey guys, Ben Lingoff. Excited to be here. Co-founder and business lead at Charged Particles. So we are an NFT protocol that enables you to get a smart wallet to your NFTs and link to it to a whole other assets.
Hi, my name is Sam Cassett. I've been around for a long time. A lot of you know me probably as Chief Strategy Officer of Consensus, where I funded a lot of stuff like Truffle, Infura, MetaMask. I was around that since the beginning. Fast forward a few years, now I'm doing a number of things. I'm a founder of a company called Aligned. In concert with the Neptune DAO, which I helped create, we provide the community to DeFi applications and sometimes things related to NFTs and a bunch of other stuff I'll be talking about soon.
All right, so let's go ahead and dive right into this. So just let's get really, really grounded here. We have DeFi, that thing is pretty damn robust. NFTs are still pretty new, but also extremely big. And the cool thing about crypto is it goes in all directions at once, and it really seems to be that the intersection of DeFi and NFTs is kind of like one of the last areas that, as an industry, we really haven't tapped into yet. So when we open up the door and look behind the intersection of DeFi and NFTs, how big is this? Why does this matter? Is there something actually here? Like, let's talk about the potential of what happens when we actually combine these things. Very broad, open-ended question. And once again, Andy, let's start with you.
Right. Yeah, I think what's interesting here is there's a lot of real world assets that we do, like kind of DeFi stuff in the real world with, like taking out a mortgage on your house or different things like that. And you can like map all of that really easily to like NFTs and DeFi with NFTs. But what's really exciting is it kind of unlocks this world where you can do that with any asset in the entire world. And so not to like sound too bullish or anything, but it's kind of like the addressable market is every asset in the entire world that's worth doing DeFi with, which I think is really, really exciting. It's just like unlocking opportunities for a lot of new people and new users and stuff like that.
Yeah, I mean, to build off that, the potential to tokenize literally anything in the world is like astonishing for implications of like NFTs and DeFi. The biggest issue right now is like how illiquid these things are, the fact that we don't have any accurate price prediction, the fact that like it doesn't matter if I make my house on OpenSea, if I don't have accurate price prediction for that, there's no way that I can leverage it against anything. So especially like what we're working towards at Upshot, we kind of market it as the intersection of NFTs and DeFi because we're building that foundational element, which is that accurate, real-time, updating every 10 minutes price feed on literally every NFT. Suddenly things like, I don't know, synthetics become possible. Take like underwriting your debt with NFTs becomes possible with accurate price prediction and price feed. So I'm extremely bullish on this new asset class and this new world. That is the foundational element that's missing, and it's around the corner. So.
Yeah, so, I mean, a lot of great points, but I think segmenting these things into this is the NFT world and this is the DeFi world, even within NFTs themselves, like DeFi itself, there's so many sub-categories and sub-sections of each of those. So eventually all of these things kind of meld into one big crypto space. The metaverse is surrounded by NFTs everywhere, and those NFTs will have DeFi-esque aspects. You will have structured products that are containerized within an NFT, and it just makes sense because that whole thing can move around. So we'll continue to see like melding and the intersection of all of these in new and innovative ways, and we're just really beginning to scratch the surface of both of these together, both individually.
Agreed. Yeah, I think at a conference like this, a lot of what we think about as NFTs are kind of like punks and apes and profile pictures and things like that. But I think to take a step back, NFT just means non-fungible token, right? It's a thing. It's a thing that's a unique digital object instead of a bunch of objects like a stock or something. It's just a unique thing, right? And that can represent almost anything. We're starting to see experiments in that. Some people have tried it with like real property. It's a little bit hard to link it to real property, like houses. We can imagine how something like the title to a house could be an NFT. It can also be linked to access, right? So Uniswap V3, the thing that represents your liquidity that you provided to the Uniswap exchange, is an NFT. Some poor gentleman accidentally stole it because he thought it was a present that he got from Uniswap. But like, if you think about it like that, all we know, you know, we have this object, and that object can represent almost anything, right? You could lock other objects inside of it. You could use it like a derivative where other, you know, a collection of other NFTs or a collection of other fungible assets is linked to that, and that thing can be traded. And you can almost imagine the hierarchical structures that exist in normal finance. We can do that times a thousand algorithmically because we have these two structures together. It's just something for fungible and something for non-fungible. So there's a ton of intersection to it. I think there's a lot farther we have to go in the field because, frankly, on like Ethereum L1, gas is too expensive to move around a thing that costs a dollar or even $10 or whatever, right? So, you know, I'll stop there. But we have, you know, fractionalization, lending, et cetera. There's a lot of applications over early.
So for this next question, I actually want Andy to go last. So Sam, I'm going to start with you. NFTs and DeFi, isn't it just, this is a devil's advocate question, isn't it just as simple as putting an ERC-20 token inside of a contract that spits out an ERC-20 token? Isn't that the whole story? Is this really that big of a deal?
Or
is there more to unpack? Like, what other things are involved with the intersection of DeFi of NFTs? Why is it more than just fractionalizing ERC-721 tokens?
Right. I agree. So I think there are lots of things that are not just fractionalizing, right? So there's something, yeah, for instance, using it as collateral. right? There are, there's also kind of gradations, right? Like we say 721 and ERC 20, but actually there's 1155, right? Which is sort of somewhere in between, right? There's a series of cards. So imagine one of the biggest applications of DeFi and NFTs is in game, in the metaverse, right? And so the metaverso, where we are now, in the metaverse, right, you can imagine an entire multi-trillion dollar economy, as big as the existing economy, of things that are like semi-fungible and that you might want to use as representing their underlying financial reality, right? You might want to lend against them, you might want to sell them in a series, I might want to do lots of things that look like normal financial activity. And so no, I don't think it's just sticking in ERC-20 inside of something else. It's just, they're logically separate. In fact, there are gradations between.
Yeah, so DeFi meets NFT, right? So financialization, fractionalization, this is the big one, using as collateral. You can also permissions, like in a trustless way, lend your NFTs or renting, renting versus lending. But yeah, the ability to have an NFT hold other assets, then use that basket as collateral, use that basket as a trust account, transfer it to somebody. You have multiple of these baskets kind of as sub accounts within your wallet, your address. This opens up a lot of opportunities and abilities.
And if you take it down to like the most basic thing you could possibly do, you know, right now creating synthetics on existing NFTs is something that's around the corner as well. So suddenly you don't have to necessarily own this entire NFT to like benefit from its valuation in the market. You'd be able to hold a kind of arbitrary position in any NFT that you see value in over time. And I wouldn't say like a bet on it or wage on it, but access to all of these different beautiful exotic mechanisms through synthetics is also going to be like a beautiful new sort of new horizon and bring accessibility to the space as well, which is one of the biggest lacking points right now.
Yeah, I think too, something that is interesting when you think about like using DeFi with NFTs is not to flood my own bags and my company, but like I don't think everyone always wants to fractionalize every NFT to use it in DeFi. But like just because you fractionalize an NFT doesn't mean it's immediately liquid. It doesn't mean that there's $100 million of liquidity on Uniswap to use that as like a price oracle to do all these other things. And so I think that we really need like just new creators and builders in the space thinking about unique and novel ways to kind of port some of the things that we've done in DeFi into like an NFT world where like lending with NFTs and borrowing against your NFT probably does not look the same. It's not just fractionalize your NFT and borrow against those fractions. It doesn't really make sense to spend a long time trying to map that all out. But like maybe you borrow against your NFT and if you get liquidated, then it's fractionalized and you like pay off the liquidation the fractions and you keep some fractions. And you can like start to build like more interesting, more NFT-centric stuff that I think is really where this all has to go to see significantly larger adoption and kind of like meet NFT collectors and users and buyers where they are.
Yeah, and I think it's important, I mean, mentioned it a few times, but we are early and there are like core infrastructural issues. Like, it's very tough to do these things with a very small amount, and yeah, there's layer two, it's another more cheaper layer ones perhaps, but like, it is early, so it's the early innings. There's regulatory uncertainty, so it's very difficult to just, this is the innovation sandbox, and we'll go crazy and build these crazy things that we can dream up, because there are these more archaic laws and things that we have to play with.
So let's talk about liquidity, because if there's one thing that DeFi is really, really good at, it's liquidity. Uniswap V3, fantastically liquid on just not a ton of capital. And then things like Compound and Aave are just another forms of liquidity. On the other side of things, ERC-721s, NFTs, are inherently illiquid. That's the unique nature of these things, is that the fewer the number of them are, it's the harder it is to have a market. So let's talk about how DeFi can actually aid the NFT side of Ethereum and broader crypto in accessing more and more liquidity, and what that can really do for bringing out the best of NFTs. Andy, why do NFTs need liquidity so badly? How can DeFi help?
Yeah, well, so I think, like, kind of going back to a lot of the DeFi stuff, like a lot, most DeFi primitives, to a certain extent, require liquidity to price things or liquidate things or doing a million other different things. And what I'm excited about is thinking about potentially interesting ways to do that with order books and different ways to really be able to gauge interest and demand for a particular NFT and a lot of different stuff like that. And I don't think we totally know what it looks like yet. Like, I don't think that it's as simple as just, oh, Uniswap AMM went for NFT support. And I think, like, you can do that to a certain extent from, like, NFTX or these different pools that are, like, pulling together, like, floor-level pumps or different things like that. But I think we'll need to see some level of innovation on the order book and demand side of NFTs in general. And it probably, like, I know there's some interesting stuff. I know that ZeroX Montes guy is working on something called PseudoSwap, and he's working on like an NFT AMM on top of that. And there's interesting stuff happening in that space, and I'm really excited to see that play out. And I think that you can like kind of tie in a lot of the things that we're all working on into helping to make them more liquid in those types of models.
Yeah, I mean, we're, it's really interesting you bring up the order book situation. Something that we're working on at Upshot, which is the alpha of all alphas, and this doesn't leave here, or it does, I guess, most of all, but like the foundation of these appraisals and having these accurate prices that we can all agree on, because it's done on chain, it is like literally, I don't know, just decentralized appraisals, decentralized price points, undisputed. Suddenly those order books have a price. Suddenly there is a world where you'd be able to go onto a marketplace, onto a platform, and sell your NFT for whatever the appraised price point is for this specific NFT. Not listed at floor price, not listed below floor price, and hope that someone bites. Know that there are people out there that see the potential of these assets and go, whatever it is, whatever the appraised price for this is, I want it. And for you to be able to buy that in return as well, to be able to see when something is like listed below the appraised price and capture that moment. Like right now, we're just sort of guessing on a market, guessing in a bubble, hopefully not a bubble, but it feels a little like a bubble without that source of truth. So the sky's the limit.
Yeah. No, I also agree. I do agree that like you can't just take these models that work in DeFi with fungible tokens. All the tokens are interchangeable. It doesn't matter if I have this one or that one. With non-fungible tokens, which by definition are unique, not fungible. So, you know, like Andy said, you can't just do the Uniswap for NFTs. That doesn't quite work like that. So we are, and people are experimenting and playing around. And there are four structural issues like pricing that are difficult. But at the end of the day, it is a nascent market. There are inefficiencies in all nascent early markets. And these things just kind of are arbitrage to wait. People come in as speculators and stay because there's a lot more going on, and that's just kind of part of it.
Yeah, I agree. I think just to go back again to like the generality here, right? Like ERC-721 can be anything. It can be a house, it can be my shoe, whatever. Like, what is an order book for my shoe? It doesn't make sense, right? there's going to be different idiosyncratic ways that you might want to sell or provide liquidity to the thing depending on what it is, right? And like different kinds of stuff have different amounts of liquidity. Apartments in New York have liquidity, kind of, but the interface into that, the order book of that is an MLS system and some people that are very nice and show it to you. You know, the liquidity of a house here is also very good now, but you know, some places it might not be. Liquidity of your profile picture NFT, maybe not so much, but like, you know, EptoNDAO, for instance, that's something we've talked to a lot of groups about, like, I've got a really valuable punk or something, like, we lend against it, right? So, what does an order look like for that thing? We basically need to recreate the financial system again in a way that's programmatized and hopefully better and more efficient, but it's gotta be completely idiosyncratic depending on what the asset is and how it behaves. What about in the metaverse, right? What if I've got, there are 5,000 of these shields in this game, and there's only, there's 20,000 people who might want one, that I can imagine what that order book might look like, right? So it's about this gradation, it's about the idiosyncrasies. And just the point of what I'm saying is trying to think about it generally as like something that can represent any asset, and then back into the answer.
So continuing on this conversation about how to value an NFT when it doesn't really behave in the same way as an ERC-20 token, And especially like some art blocks, for example, Fidenzas, Ringers, there could be weeks that go by before a sale happens. But those sales are still big sales, right? A Fidenza will still go for hundreds of ETH. And just because a week goes by without a sale happens doesn't mean that there isn't demand for these things. They can be plenty liquid even with low sales. So that brings us to the conversation of how do we appraise these things? How do we value these things when there isn't like a Uniswap market for these things possibly trading? So Laura, I want to ask you this question since this has to do with Upshot. We'll start with you. Let's talk about the oracles, the combination of oracles and NFTs rather than on-chain markets with NFTs. How can we use alternative methods to discover the values of these NFTs that can be turned into an oracle for the rest of DeFi to tap into in a secure manner?
So the way that we've been going about it at Upshot is using a new form of mechanism called peer prediction, where you're essentially, you ask a bunch of experts, something you validate based on their holdings, right? If you own like 100 punks, you probably, the process is asking experts a bunch of A-B questions, essentially, which NFT is more valuable, A or B, all of those answers go through a correlation, like a new type of mechanism design, that comes out with an honesty score for each appraiser and then pulls the value one way or another. So it isn't like one person saying that this is worth 300 ETH and that's it and I'm an expert. It's like hundreds of thousands of people pulling that price one way or another and then using machine learning to automatically update that constantly. So you have this human element feeding into machine learning, feeding back to the human element. The one piece that's missing, and I think that is going to be the game changer in this, is finding a way to track that community owner and finding a way to track that like that utility component. Because right now you can't necessarily spit utility into machine learning and they say that's valuable, right? But there is a way to look at a community, look at a Discord server, look at who's involved in a project, bring all these factors together and come to a conclusion that yeah, this is probably the beginning of something big. And then using peer prediction machine learning to pull that value to a price point and keep it going relative to each other, relative to the collection. So that's the way that we're going about it. It's also because it's an on-chain protocol, it's something that you can dispute and fork it. You can say I don't agree with that and try it yourself. I think that's another very important aspect of this is that there should not be one governing human that says like this is truth. Like you should say, I think this is truth, and you can figure out if you think this is truth as well. That's way more decentralized, way more for Web3. But right now, we're spitting out price predictions for like the top 200 NFT collections every 10 minutes. And I'm so excited to like bring that to the world.
One of the things that I'm excited about is like being able to combine that with a lot of other on-chain stuff as well. It's something that I think about a lot for Fractional, and like ways that we can basically help our users who are buying a particular Fidenza or something have a significantly more informed decision, or basically be able to even plug into automated things and say, once the appraisal on Upshot is 10% higher than the current fractional price of this thing, I want to be a buyer up until 5% higher, or different things like that. And we've also been thinking a lot about how fractions can like potentially help a lot more with pricing these things. And there's a lot of challenges because even a relatively rare Fidenza, the entire valuation of it is still a couple million dollars. It's not like you're going to get some insane liquid market for this one individual piece. But what we've been thinking about a lot lately is potentially like having ongoing auctions for percentages of it. And so you can then like kind of imply what the price is and say like, okay, if we were to auction off 1% ownership of Fidenza and someone's willing to pay 1 Ethereum for it, this is probably worth around 100 Ethereum. And if you like do that on a long enough like time horizon, like based on you say, okay, over the 10 days when 1% was auctioned in August, they went for between 1 Ethereum and 2 Ethereum, so it ends up that time was worth 1.5 Ethereum, or something along those lines. I'm really excited to start experimenting more kind of in that side of things, where as a protocol, you have a lot more control over the supply and how people are buying and interacting and trying to infer a price on that.
I think it's important with the pricing aspect of NFTs. I mean, we keep going back to this, but NFTs are so prime. The utility value varies by person. So if I'm a gamer, like getting an in-game item NFT to me might have a lot more value to me versus a non GitHub, or if I enter a metaverse real estate board and I want to buy up a whole block, like, that has a different value to me versus somebody that doesn't display it. And then as we continue to add layer in utility value, so I can rent off my land plot in the metaverse, I can rent off this in-game asset to somebody else, I can rent my PFP of a pump to somebody that wants to go to a pump's only party. Like, this changes the value of these things drastically. For me, I don't have a pump, but if I do and I was renting it, then that adds value to me a bit because I can monetize it, I can rent it out. But to somebody that owns a pump and doesn't want to rent it, does it diminish the value because then the guy rented it to come to the party? So all of these additional utilities also impact pricing significantly in kind of ways that we haven't really fully thought out or will continue to play and think out. But looking at like other more illiquid alternative asset markets like art or real estate, these all have varying levels of liquidity and pricing, even though kind of a transaction happens more infrequently than like the liquid public markets.
Yeah, I mean, perfect liquidity and perfect price discovery would be the holy grail of all markets, right? It's going to have to be different depending on what asset it is. Right? In a future where you have an NFT and it's actually a roll up of 5,000 other NFTs and 25 of them are priced by Moody's or rated by Moody's and some of them are rated by Moody's 2050 or whatever the next, you know, like Upshot is, you know, as Upshot evolves into stuff that, you know, is going to replace those dinosaurs like that. Right? We're going to have so many different pricing mechanisms and hopefully it'll be on-chain algorithmic and much more efficient and we won't have things like, you know, 2008 happened because actually it's more transparent. Let's hold up inside 10 different layers of this thing. But yes, price discovery would be great. I think we need a whole bunch of effort in each particular asset class, how to do it, standards will evolve to the point, hopefully better than we have in the normal financial system as well.
I want to bring up the topic of community here because I think if there's one thing that we've learned that's a universal truth with crypto, if it doesn't have a community, it's not going to make it. And one of the reasons probably why punks made it through the bear market was that is because the Discord was a fun place to be in the bear market as a shared place of absorbing all the pain of downward prices for 2 years. So I want to talk about like when we combine NFTs and DeFi, how can that be a tool for community generation? How can that be a community tool? Andy, you can start with you.
Yeah, I think we've seen some really, really cool stuff recently with just random groups of people raising funds to buy stuff between like Constitution DAO and now we have the Free Ross DAO, which is really exciting. And you know, while raising funds to participate in a DAO isn't like explicitly DeFi, it starts to really walk into that whole territory. And I think in general, the ability for communities that are built around particular NFTs or different groups to also turn it into like this monetary tool where they're able to build their own microeconomies and do all this stuff inside of their shared interest group is just like really, really interesting and exciting. And I think it has the potential also to help a lot of people who like otherwise cannot do this in either the country they live in or the type of assets that they're able to own and all that. I have a feeling we're going to continue to see just like a ton more of these just random DAOs coming up buying stuff. And there's people like DeFi-ing their smaller communities and assets.
Shout out freerossdao.com. It's Constitution DAO for crossovers NFT.
Thinking about the implications of like what you can do with NFTs and community building, like just to take it to the music industry for a second, like being able to track your fan base and their interactions with your work, with your NFTs, with your music, with your concerts, all on chain, suddenly you have like a way more personalized way of like communicating with these fans. Figuring out who they are, where they are, what they're doing. That adds so much value suddenly, not only to every single output of like a creator's like, world, but also value to that community of being a part of it. And having these like NFT passports suddenly that bring you into this world. At FWB, we like to say that like access is better than value. Like, what world are you unlocking with these NFTs? I've been throwing around the idea of starting like an activism DAO for Puerto Rico and using NFTs as a way to crowdfund for specific initiatives. And yes, like
Yeah, right.
And then even like honestly just the NGO space, like, oh wow, they got going. The NFT is such a more accessible entry point for most people. It's such a beautiful way to rally people behind a cause. The NFT can be a ticket, it can be art, it can be whatever it is, but it is a unifying, limited asset. And at the end of the day, that is essentially a community, if we put a community behind that. So we'll talk more about that DAO later.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, humans are social creatures, and this kind of virtual world is not a social world that we're living in. It's nice to have this shared group, that sense of community, and we all have this PFP, and that makes us unique. We're all hopping this token, and that's what brings us together. Or we have a group chat that spins up its own DAO-like structure, and we're all part of this together. So I think Web3 in general really allows communities to be much more autonomous and distributed in all these unique, fun ways. But then, NFTs and DeFi, what we're doing with Charged Particles, you can take this NFT that you own and love, that's part of your community, your board game, and then you can infuse it with DeFi, plugging into the Aave protocol underneath, bringing a little bit of yield, all containerized within your board game, and then potentially maybe that interest equates to something within the Discord because you've staked so much Aave into your board game. Like, you're never going to sell. You have so much money locked into your game that it gives you a little extra something within that community. So the ability for these things to work together and you things to strengthen that community bond is something that I'm really looking forward to over the next couple years for sure.
So I think something has happened that's pretty remarkable over the last few years, which is the merging of this concept of sociality and brands and financial assets. And I think it's a generational thing. And if you look at the way that teenagers behave versus the way that my parents' generation behaves, for instance, financial interaction is a lot more like something that you care about online. Obviously, NFTs are an example. Look at GameStop and the community around it on Reddit, right? There's something democratizing happening, and there's something that is sort of not going to make it. We don't have community energy around it, but brands are realizing this right now. There's a reason why brands, people who work for brands, are all over NFT events that we have, because they realize that if you're an asset or you're a product or whatever, you don't have that social element to it. It wasn't possible before because we didn't have the social media to be the administrative layer of that. We didn't have the ability to connect in that way. Maybe you go once a year at the shareholders meeting, see your buddy from the club or whatever. But now you've got people every day, all day, and those things merge into what is an asset class, how much do I care about this asset. And I think as human minds evolve with phones in hand, and these communities around them blur with what is a community and what's an asset, that's what we're seeing right now, is going to be increasingly important in our hands.
I got one last thing to say, especially for artists. I think something that's missing from this conversation is how an artist can incentivize secondary market action through their NFT collection. I think every artist should take a look at the OG Crystals collection, that that first mint is this tiny little geode, and then programmatically inside the smart contract, every time it resells, another piece of that crystal grows out of it, and suddenly those crystals become more and more valuable, and that floor crystal suddenly more and more valuable, and that encouraged resale, that daisy chain of people wanting to discover what's on the other side of that sale. That's something that doesn't have necessarily to do with DeFi, but it does have to do with incentivized finance, incentivized sales, something that any artist can do. Get creative with your smart contracts, contact the facility that you know, and use that creative problem-solving mind to play with it, because there's so much potential beyond just minting the piece you made last year. This is a new playground. There are a lot of DGens and DeFi bros here, but getting artists in here, getting musicians in here, and tackling that landscape, which is the contract itself, I think is where we're going to see the next genesis of these incredible financial tools that are beyond us trying to retrofit NFTs into DeFi protocols, and instead building it into the contract itself. So go out there and send with us secondary guys.
this conversation has been extremely engrossing, and I actually have no clue how much time we have left, so I'm just going to keep on going until someone stops me. So there's been a lot of use cases and a lot of potential that I think is a ton of fun here, and I think when we have too much fun, the regulators come. Let's start with Sam and work our way backwards. What about the regulatory clarity or lack of clarity is kind of what's holding back the intersection of NFT fractionalization or the seeking up of DeFi and NFTs? What about the SEC or CFTC is relevant to this conversation, and what's perhaps can be used as an industry to really help this industry go forward?
Well, tough question. So I think what's relevant to answer that part of the question is there are two approaches that regulators seem to have to like what's going on in the industry. There's either you take a bunch of laws that were written in the 1930s and try to apply it to what we're doing now, or, and sometimes that does make sense actually, sometimes clearly that seems to make sense, or you look at the use of credit properties and what we're doing and say this is something we're going to do, maybe we should call something. There's always going to be a tension between those things, and the definitions are shifting now too. A punk seems like a piece of art. Pretty sure it's going to be treated like a piece of art, in my opinion. Some regulators don't agree with that. I don't really understand why, but then there's something that may be an NFT, and then it does have properties that looks like something other than that can turn off, and then what do you do? So it's a blurry line, I think, to the extent that regulators provide clarity, is the extent to which, you know, the United States or whatever jurisdiction we're talking about can excel in that domain. If you look at the history of like consensus, for instance, and you know, the beginnings of Ethereum, there's a reason why a lot of it was in jurisdictions that that understood the technology, right? And so to the extent that our regulatory bodies understand the technology and look at it really closely, I think it's the extent to which your jurisdiction as a regulator is going to excel. So I hope that we do that.
Yeah, I would just give the broad caveat. Lawyers, not legal advisors, definitely not pretending to be a lawyer over the stage. I guess I completely agree with all of this. These are laws that were written in the 1930s, 1940s. I mean, DAO with more than 100 members with no legal entity. It's a general partnership and over 100 people. It's a security company, in the 1940s security. So these are like serious issues, and even though I'm a big fan, I don't believe that these make sense, but they do, and they're real rules. And AML and things like that, these are real issues that you can go to jail for a long, long time. So even though I would encourage innovators in space to find a lawyer they can trust, work with these, this is an evolving, shifting scenario of regulatory unknowns right now, which is pretty much gray, but you can do things in a more structured, intelligent way and shield yourself a little bit, but the key is if you're operating within the space, you are taking a little bit of risk, some amount of risk, so you have to know where that line in the sand is, how much risk you're willing to take, because if you don't want to take any potential regulatory risks, don't even launch anything, that's the unfortunate reality. Hopefully you have more of that, but it is very regulatory.
Where's
your
ring you're killing right now? What's the ones that can help you find the right language to say what you want to do and make it happen and make it legal? You informed me. I agree, it's uncharted territory, it's scary. But slowly but surely, society's catching up. I think we're slowly figuring out what this is all about. We're extremely privileged to be in this room and have some sort of semblance of what this is. Most people in regulation have no idea what's going on. They're Bitcoin. This is all some sort of Bitcoin, isn't it? It's absolutely not. So if there are any policymakers out there who are listening to this podcast, get vocal, educate your peers. Because as much as we might like to keep the playground to ourselves, things are getting too big, things are getting out of control, and we can't do this in the shadows anymore. And it's better to have people who understand in there working on these regulations than all of us as people think we want.
Yeah, I'll echo what everyone said. Totally agree. I think in general it's really hard and scary to have to build these stuff in general because there's so little regulatory clarity on a lot of things. A lot of the stuff with NFTs, conversations around roadmaps and, you know, token initiatives and stuff, it's so new and so unknown. It feels a lot to me like in 2017, all these things were coming out, and every single one was called security. Maybe some of them were, some of them weren't. We don't really know, but like, we still don't know. And it's a very frustrating thing, but like, I also understand, like, the regulatory bodies that are doing stuff are only so big and only so many resources, and they're not all like crypto nerds incredibly deep in this system. We can't expect them to like see some weird new Wolf Game project that comes out and then it'll be like, actually, you guys, that's good. That's a good point. And so it's just like, it's going to take a long time and a lot of work. Definitely talk to lawyers super smart than I am. But yeah, it'll just take a long time. It sucks right now, but we'll figure it out.
All right, guys, last question. Let's think about something that you personally would love to use in the intersection of DeFi and NFTs. If you want to lend out your punk, you want to collateralize something, I don't know. But what use case could be built that is not built yet that you are looking forward to that will actually improve your personal funds? Real quick, we'll get that one in. Andy, let's start with you.
Okay. I really want to use a lending protocol, like a MakerDAO style, with some better stablecoin. That is like basically pegged to the floor price of a particular like profile picture project or offer, where you can basically borrow against that with some fixed floor price and not have to worry about like valuation of your individuals.
Come on. I wanna make like a curated synthetics album. Like choose every NFT in the space that I think is gonna make it like Pinterest board, and then make a synthetic based on that and give people like unlimited access to this thing. Like bottom floor buying, that for me would be incredible.
I'd like to see somebody use Charge Marbles to create a virtual geocaching in Metaverse. So you have an NFT that you buy, you put a bunch of interest bearing assets in it, whoever finds it first just collects the interest and you don't sacrifice the principal. It's a cool way to engage people, get them to your property in the Metaverse, talk to people.
I would like to have a way to build essentially like a REIT of the metaverse and have it be run by really awesome people and invest in it.
Awesome. Thank you guys so much for being on the panel. Really appreciate it.
Hey, we hope you enjoyed the video. If you did, head over to Bankless HQ right now to develop your crypto investing skills and learn how to free yourself from banks and gain your financial independence. We recommend joining our daily newsletter, podcast, and community as a Bankless Premium subscriber to get the most out of your Bankless experience. You'll get access to our market analysis, our alpha leaks, and exclusive content, and even the Bankless token for airdrops, raffles, and unlocks. If you're interested in crypto, the Bankless community is where you want to be. Click the link in the description to become a Bankless Premium subscriber today. Also, don't forget to subscribe to the channel for in-depth interviews with industry leaders, Ask Me Anythings, and weekly roll-ups where we summarize the week in crypto and other fantastic content. Thanks everyone for watching and being on the journey as we build out the Bankless Nation.